Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Got another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime for you this week, beginning with crime classics. This episode, titled The Bourne Brothers and the Hangman, first aired January 27th, 1954. Bennett's five-minute mystery and pattern of guilt. We'll finish off with Rogue's Gallery and The Corpse I Didn't Kill. That episode aired June 13th, 1946.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. That was Jacko. Jacko, the three-quarter Irish setter. A good dog. Usually a well-behaved dog. Friend to the children of Manchester Village, Vermont. An inquisitive dog. Whatever disturbs him isn't buried very deep. Listen to him digging. Smart dog. He's found what he was after. He's tugging at it. Gets it. Good dog. What have you got there, Jacko? A bone. Looks like a leg bone, doesn't it? A human leg bone. Tonight, my report to you on The Bourne Brothers and the Hangman, a study in Nip and Tuck.
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
They were fighting battles on Lake Champlain in 1812, but across the state, forests away and mountains apart, the village of Manchester sent peaceful fans of chimney smoke into the February air. It was ebb of winter and edge of spring. It was snow flurry and thaw and chill sunlight. Here, the Battenkill River flowed swift and dark down from the Green Mountains and crusted icily near its banks and past the village, then flowed swift and dark away. And where the snow had melted, the soil glistened and was rich and black. Farmhouses gleamed white. And where the furrow began, the shallow furrow that deepened and roughened and slowly rose up the mountainside and became the gorge that cut across the face of Mount Equinox, where it gently began was the backyard of the house of Russell and Sally Colvin. And inside it...
He's sleeping.
Asleep? Why? Why asleep? What did you put him to sleep for?
Please.
There's moonlight on the snow, and there's moonlight on the mountain, and I promised my son he'd see.
Why do you do that? Why do you fill his mind with lies and fancies?
There's little men on the mountain tonight, and I told my son he'd see them. Lewis!
Don't wake him, Russell. Don't wake him.
Stop hanging on my arm, woman.
Russell!
Stop hanging on my arm!
Crazy! Crazy man!
Wake! Wake, son. I'll bundle you, and it's up the mountain we'll go tonight with you riding my shoulders. And little men we'll find. Them at their bowls and singing and dancing. And we'll join them. Come with me, son. Up the path the moonlight makes on the mountain snow. Up the path the moonlight makes.
As any mother knows, this is an upsetting experience. And as Sally Colvin knew, this was not the first experience of its kind. Sometimes her husband would hoist her son on his back and walk away from the house and not come back for days at a time. And when they did, they would smile at each other secret smiles and say nothing of where they had been. And there were secret words between them that Sally could not understand, and signs and small patterns of dance, and then great bursts of laughter. And this time, the time when Russell took his son up the path the moonlight made, and they returned 2 days later.
Where have you been? In heaven's name, where have you been?
Shh! He's sleeping. Now you will sleep the day away and the night. The sun. And dream of the fancies we've seen in the little men. Sleep. Sleep.
Tell me what.
Shh.
No.
Oh, sister. Oh, come in. What can I do for you in the morning?
Hold me. Hold me.
What? Oh, sister. Sister to me, what troubles you? Him again? Your husband?
Yes. Oh, yes.
And what?
What he's doing to my son. Soon.
What?
My son will become as mad as my husband. They speak of creatures in the mist in the gorge. And starbursts and moon. Brother Stephen Bourne.
What do you want me to do?
I don't know.
He's a stronger man than I. There's not much I can do.
But you and our brother Jesse Bourne, together you could do it.
Don't speak to me of Jesse, him that I hate.
But me? What of me?
Speak no more of it.
Save me, Stephen Bourne. That's what I ask of you.
Sister...
Save me.
How?
Very well, you know how. You and Jesse, you know it and you have said it. Come with me to our brother's forge and make peace and save me, your sister. Stands here before you and wishes to friend with you because... Jesse!
Out of my way, there's work to be done.
I'm no blacksmith, Jesse, and I've not got the sinews of you, but listen to your sister and what her trouble is, or I'll try you.
Will you now? Will you?
Oh.
Me who can split your head to your heart in a stroke, try me, will you? Then do it!
Stop it! Stop it! Listen to me. I'm being killed, and my death is the madness around me.
What are you saying?
Of our husband.
Let her say it.
And what he does to my child.
I've heard strangenesses in the village of your husband, sister. And when I've heard them, I've smiled to myself in remembering. This is the man you needed to marry, sister. Would die without, sister. And now he's a daft and a loon. Now he's...
Hear her out.
Say on, sister.
He takes Louis with him on walkings. For days. And they return. And there are secrets and madnesses.
And loneliness for you.
I care nothing of it. I care only for my son.
Jesse.
Take his hand, Jesse Bourne, and be brothers again. For there is a bond now. The need to help me.
Yes.
And... Now listen to me. There where the ravine starts, by the field where it is rocky, I will send my husband there.
A plotter, our sister.
I will send my husband there tomorrow in the morning. Will you be there? Will the both of you be there?
We'll be there.
Now, hear to me, son, the way I do it. Come a goblin, come a teeny, come an elfin, come a greeny, come about all, and you shall...
Russell.
I'll finish it for you later, son.
Russell. And there you are. with your son mute and agape at you again.
What do you want?
It's a new morning and the new season of spring's coming in with it.
And so?
And so there's work.
And you need not tell me of it. There's no work I do not do on this farm. I need no telling of it.
In the upper field and where the rocks are easy to pull from the ground now that the thaw has softened it.
I know of it. You need not remind me.
Tonight the night frost may harden the ground again.
I know it.
Then go.
I'll be back, son. Think hard of the verse I taught you.
And away he went, did Russell Colvin, on this new morning toward the upper field. He'd not gone 20 yards when he stopped.
Gold.
Sparkle of sun on Vermont granite. Small pool of sparkle.
Gold.
And he picked it up and put it in his pocket, then on again, the long way around, through the grove of naked spruce, to give throat to the new season.
Oh!
And on, to the brook now, and stop beside it, and kneel beside it and listen.
Yes. Yes.
Then through a thicket and into the upper field and the surprise in store for him.
Oh, Russell.
Hello, Jesse Boyne. Stephen.
Oh, brother-in-law.
What do you hear?
To help you, Russell.
To do what?
To help you clear the rocks now that the ground is soft with thaw.
And how do you know I'm here to do that?
How indeed?
I need not your help.
I'm hearing you do, brother-in-law.
I'm hearing that way, too.
We're in hearing you don't do well by our sister, Russell. That's what we hear most of.
And who's saying that?
Our sister, your wife's saying it, Russell.
More wife than sister, so it's not of your business. So it's off the land with you, the two of you.
Oh, now indeed.
What you heft in that branch for, Stephen?
I'm aiming to brain you with it.
You are aiming the same, Jesse?
Going to help.
Then let's get to it, and we'll see.
Let's get to it indeed.
Stephen Bourne used the branch as a club, and with excellent teamwork, he and his brother Jesse won the fight.
You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. Tomorrow evening, CBS Radio invites you again to Mystery and Intrigue, enhanced by the presence of Miss Marlena Dietrich. This Thursday, Miss Dietrich's adventure leads her to a little town in southern France, where stories of buried treasure have been bruited loudly enough to gather rapscallions of reprehensible inclination from all corners of Europe. Time for Love is heard tomorrow evening on most of these same stations. And now once again, Thomas Highland in the second act of Crime Classics, and his report to you on the Bourne Brothers and the Hangman. A study in nip and tuck.
It was a good spring. April of 1812 was the gentlest in the memory of those who lived on the soft shoulder of Mount Equinox in Vermont. There were rumors of marchings and torch and war outside, but no one paid much attention. They were more important things, church, crops, and children. Living to be done in the Green Mountains, the crackling air to be breathed, roam away through the soft fall of twilight and press a cheek against the warmth of an animal. Wondrous sunsets and tomorrow a wondrous dawn. Good place and good time, this valley. And one morning, as a matter of fact, on the morning after the Bourne brothers had done an errand for their sister.
Come in. Oh, good morning, Mrs. Wyman.
And to you, Mrs. Colvin.
A sweet morning.
Tis.
And what may I do for you?
It's Wednesday.
And so it is.
So I've come again so your mister can drive me to the village again. He to shop for you and me for mine.
He's not here.
Oh, no. In the field, then?
Not in the field.
Oh, of course he is not, for I saw your son Louis at play just outside the door, and he would be in the fields with his daddy dear, were his daddy dear in the fields.
You'll be late to market, Mrs. Wyman.
Where's the dear man, your husband, Mrs. Colvin?
Gone.
Where gone?
To the mountain.
Oh?
I think.
And when will he return?
I don't know.
Oh, such a dear man. And the dear fancies he sees and tells you of. Ah, what a fortunate woman you are, Mrs. Colvin.
I've cleaning to do, Mrs. Wyman.
And busy you are, I know, Mrs. Colvin, preparing supper for you and your beautiful child. But it's a month since the village has seen your husband last. And for the last week it's been raining. And if the dear Mr. Colvin is in the mountains, as you say, what then, Mrs. Colvin? What then?
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe what?
Maybe he has gone to war.
It's a year now, Mrs. Colvin. Have you heard from the dear man? Ah, it's a cruel war. I came to wish the all of you, you, Mrs. Colvin, and you, Stephen Bourne, and Jesse Bourne, a happy new year to you. May 1817 be a blessing to all of you.
And to you, Mrs. Wyman.
Happy new year, Mrs. Wyman.
Happy new year.
And a pity Mr. Colvin's not here. I suppose he'll never return now, will he? Happy New Year.
Now stop your crying, Sally.
A boy's a boy.
Only 14. My son, Louis.
I run off to join the militia. What's that? Most what all boys doing now.
Maybe I've failed.
What are you saying, sister?
Maybe the whole thing was done wrong.
What wrong?
7 years since he's had no father. Maybe his father should have been close to him.
The loneliness again, sister.
Poor my son.
Hey, what's the outcry? See what, Stephen?
Ho, Stephen Bourne!
What is it, Sheriff Skinner?
See there! A fire to Dr. Glazier's barn. Fetch a bucket in quick.
Yes.
Jesse, there's a fire to Dr. Glazier's barn. You surely know the barn, Jesse.
Fire! Oh, fire!
And in 1819, fires were not very easy to control. It was a matter of having enough men and enough buckets to reach from the fire to the stream. And Dr. Glazier's barn was not notably close to the stream, nor were there enough men nor buckets. So, the fire had its own way. It burned the barn to the ground. And later, when the ashes had cooled and while Sheriff Skinner was consoling Dr. Glazier on his loss, the sheriff's dog...
Ah, what you digging there, Jacko? Oh, find something, Jacko? Bring it here, Jacko. Ah, let's see what you got there. A bone. Funny looking bone, big bone. What kind of bone would you say this was, Dr. Glazier?
Leg bone. Human.
Don't say.
Not positive. Could be, though. Well,
let's take a look, Jacko, where you found this bone. Hand me that stick of wood, will you, Doctor, so I can make this hole a little bigger.
Where I used to store my potatoes to keep them from freezing.
Uh-huh. A button now. And look here, a knife. Funny looking knife.
Let me see it. I know the knife.
Truth now, whose?
Russell Colvin's knife.
Russell Colvin now.
He's not been around.
6 years, seven.
It's his knife, all right. And that's a button off his coat, too.
And this is a human leg bone, you're saying, Doctor?
I'm not saying it's not a human leg bone.
Let's get along, Jacko. Come on, boy.
A few words about Sheriff Silas Skinner. A good man, had been sheriff of the county for nearly 20 years, and there wasn't a man who could say he hadn't got a fair shake from old Silas, or woman either. An honest man with no bias nor prejudice. A direct man.
Where's your husband, Sally?
Why, I don't know.
A man of few words.
You kill him?
No.
Who killed him, Sally?
My brother Jesse killed him, Sheriff.
A cautious man.
Maybe he did, and maybe he didn't. But I'm arresting you till I find out which.
A man of his word.
Jesse?
Yes, Sheriff?
You kill your brother-in-law, Russell Colvin?
No, Sheriff, I did not.
Who did?
My brother Stephen did.
Maybe he did and maybe he didn't. But I'm arresting you till I find out which.
Sheriff Silas Skinner sees it through.
Stephen?
Yes, Sheriff?
I locked up your sister and I locked up your brother. And I'm putting you behind bars, too.
On what charge, Sheriff?
For murdering.
Murdering who?
Russell Colvin.
I didn't murder him, Sheriff.
Well, Jesse said you did.
Jesse's lying.
I've known Jesse for long. He don't lie.
He's starting to now when he says I murdered.
You didn't murder him by yourself. That's what you're saying, isn't it, Steve?
I'm saying that right enough.
Your sister have anything to do with the murdering?
Well, not that I know of.
I'm going to tell you something, boy.
What?
I'm going to tell you something, son.
What?
You say to me what happened, it'll be easier for you.
What do you mean?
A little
easier.
Jail, that's all. No hanging.
There's a handshake that goes with it?
There is indeed.
Here's my hand, Sheriff.
And mine. Now, how was it done, son? How was it done, boy?
Russell Colvin was on his rocky upper field.
And that's where you done it, son?
And my brother got on one side of him, I got to the other.
And that's how you done it, boy?
I hit him with a tree branch.
And Jesse with his fist?
That's right.
That's right. And that's the way you killed him?
Yes, sir.
Then you took him to another farm?
Doc Glazier's.
And to that barn?
Doc Glazier's.
And buried him?
Yes, sir.
We'll write this out, son, and you'll sign it, won't you, boy?
Just a little jail?
Boy, son.
Just a little jail?
I shook your hand.
Then I'll sign it.
Good boy.
No! No, no!
Oh, stop taking on so, no. Stephen Bourne. Your brother Jesse's not acting up the way you are.
They found us guilty.
Well, you confess.
And they're gonna hang us. You said just a little jail. You said no hanging.
I did what I could.
You said no hanging.
Now you listen to me. You killed your brother-in-law and you confessed to it and you had a trial by jury and they found you guilty. And the judge said hanging. Now that's the laws applied to you and your brother. So don't carry on.
Let's do a thing, Sheriff.
What thing?
Put an advertisement in the newspapers.
An advertisement for what?
For Russell Colvin. Put a description in and say life depends on him turning up.
You crazy? You killed him. You confessed you killed him.
Who knows of Russell Colvin? Whether killed, he stayed killed. He and his moonlight little people. Do it.
Now, don't order me, son.
Please.
Huh?
Please do it.
Well, all right, son.
I have a copy here of the Rutland Herald, a newspaper of the time, which was circulated throughout this area of Vermont. I would like to read to you a classified ad which appeared in the issue of November 26, 1819. Printers of newspapers throughout the United States are desired to publish that Stephen Bourne of Manchester in Vermont is sentenced to be executed for the murder of Russell Colvin, who has been absent about 7 years. Any person who can give information of said Colvin may save the life of the innocent by making
immediate communication. Colvin is about 5 feet 5 inches, light complexion, light colored hair, blue eyes, and about 40 years of age. Why, that sounds like our hand, Russell. Except it doesn't say about a boy being with him. Well, I'll see if it is. Russell! Russell, now! What was you doing, Russell?
Talking to my boy, Lewis.
Your son, ain't he?
My son.
They're looking for a man named Russell in Manchester.
Oh?
It's going to be a hanging unless they find a man named Russell. Russell Colvin. You once said you was from Manchester.
I am.
They looking for you?
I'm Russell Colvin.
It's my duty to see you get back to Manchester, Russell.
Yes, it is.
And so, 2 days before the scheduled hanging, Russell Colvin again appeared in Manchester. And the Bourne boys were not hanged. They were set free. What about the bone? Well, it was never proven to be a human bone. And the knife and button, Russell's, how had they gotten there? Russell always smiled when he was asked that. And what did his wife say to all this?
You can come home if you want.
I don't want you no more.
I hear our son's with you.
Yes, ma'am, he is.
How did he find you 100 miles away?
Oh, the little people told him where I was. Them that lives on the path the moonlight makes. They told him.
According to the report I have right here.
In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. The Bourne Brothers, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Virginia Gregg was heard as Sally, Lamont Johnson as Russell, William Conrad as Stephen, and Jack Crucian as Jesse. Featured in the cast were Irene Tedrow, Joseph Kearns, and Herb Butterfield. Bob Lamond speaking. Here again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, London, England, in the year 1722. We will concern ourselves with the strange behavior of an escape artist. He robbed women and escaped from their men. It's listed in my files as The Incredible History of John Shepherd. Thank you. Good night.
Stay with CBS Radio right now, and you're guaranteed a ringside seat for the Archie Moore Joey Maxim Championship fight in Miami. Yes, right after station identification, most of these same stations will bring you Joey Maxim's bid to KO Archie Moore and regain the world's light heavyweight crown. The exclusive radio broadcast in just a moment. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is heard Friday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
another 5-minute mystery. Afternoon in a small seaboard town, and in an old-fashioned house, old Doc Tucker is resting in his office, waiting for his housekeeper to bring him a cup of his beloved black coffee.
Doc Tucker, if you don't quit using that new operating table for a couch, if you knew how it scares a body to walk in here and see you stretched out there.
Better than a couch, Carrie. It's adjustable. Long as I was foolish enough to buy this contraption, I might as well...
I'll get it, Doctor.
Is there a doctor here? I saw the sign. My friend, we were humming, the gun went off.
Good heavens, bring him right in. Doctor!
I'm here, Carrie. Here, young fella, put him right down here.
How is he, doctor?
Shotgun can make an awful mess of a man. Doesn't seem to be any buckshot in him, except right here where it almost tore a hole through his chest.
But how is he?
Well, I'm afraid there's not much we can do for you, friend, young fella. He's dead. Feel better now? Sort of keeled over. What's this all about?
My name is Johnson. Bertrand Johnson. His name is Billings. We were partners in business.
I see. I'll have to know what happened for my report.
Well, as I said, we were out hunting near here. That is, he was. Golf is my game. And today, he taught me how to aim and fire a shotgun.
This accident, if you could maybe tell me just how it happened.
As I told you, he'd been showing me how to aim the gun, and then some birds flew out of the bushes up ahead of us, and he told me to go after them.
You only had this one gun between you?
Yes, Billings owned it.
So you went after the birds?
Every time I got near them, they flew away. I kept following them. I guess I must have lost track of direction. I saw something move in a bush and shot at it. It was Billings.
How could you make a mistake like that?
I don't know. But the bush was very thick, and it was so far away.
Far away?
Well, it must have been at least 50 yards.
Excuse me. Carrie, can you come in here a minute?
Yes, doctor.
Here, Carrie, I want you to make a phone call. Number is on this slip of paper.
I'll leave my name and address, doctor, and the name of my partner's wife. If you could telephone her before I attempt to break the
news. It won't be necessary. Your name and address, I mean.
I don't understand.
That was the sheriff I asked Carrie to get on the phone. Until he gets here, I'm holding you for murder.
What makes the doctor suspect that what appears to be a typical hunting accident is deliberate murder? Do you know the clue? We'll learn in a moment, but first...
You've no right to accuse me like this.
A little while ago, young fella, you were asking me how bad your friend was hurt, as if you didn't know. Then you told me Billings was behind a bush about 50 yards away when this accident happened. Anybody who knows about shotguns knows that the farther away the target is, the more the pattern of buckshot spreads out. The pattern of buckshot in Billings' body proves that it was no accident, that you couldn't have been more than a few feet from him when you pulled the trigger. No, my friend, your alibi missed its mark.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Laugh a while, let a song be your style, use Fitch shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, use Fitch shampoo.
The F.W. Fitch Company, makers of Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo and Fitch's shaving creams, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Rogue speaking. You know, I'm a man who loves sunshine, in or out of orange juice. And the only place that has more sunshine per square inch than the Sahara Desert is the San Fernando Valley. San Fernando seems to be the place where everybody, including some of the healthiest gophers in the world, makes his home but me. I've withstood the blandishments of hundreds of brick-red real estate men who have offered me membership in that clan of plaid-shirted, tight blue-jeaned, high-heel-booted fraternity known as the San Fernando Valley Ranchers. Ranchers. Yes, sir. The San Fernando Valley has ranches that are thicker than any place in the world. There are at least two on every acre. Well, anyway, I was driving around out there this Sunday evening. It was swimming weather. And I happened to remember that my friend Joe Dale had a half-acre spread in the neighborhood with a quarter-acre swimming pool. So I stopped at the Antlers on the gate, rang the ship's bell hanging there, but nobody answered. I thought maybe Joe was in the pool in the rear, so I opened the door and walked in. Then I felt like walking out again, because I saw Joe Dale lying there, making a red stain on the white living room rug. Very defunct. I walked over to him and gazed down at him. Then I heard the footsteps behind me and did a half turn in time to see oblivion whistling down on my head. Oh. Everything went red, white, and blue. And I was whirling like a top. Oh, it made me dizzy whirling like that. I couldn't stand the shrieking of the wind as it whistled past my ears. I concentrated on stopping so hard that I could hear my teeth gritting. But no go. Then I thought of Ugor. And suddenly I heard his pleasant voice.
Sheepy, welcome home to Cloudy.
Oh, my head.
Funny looking, ain't he?
Wait till he sees you.
Ugor, who is this ancient feather merchant with you?
Well, Rogie, I warned you. This is her father.
You mean the little dame's father?
Is he talking about my daughter?
Yes, sir.
What's he doing with that gun? He couldn't pull the trigger with a tractor.
Will you see, Chiefy?
You're the young whippersnapper who's advising you, Ugor, here, not to marry my daughter, huh? Well, let me tell you something.
Oh, shut up. I don't feel good.
Rogie, you're making things tough for me. Her father has a gun.
I'm not going to stand for much more fooling around, Ugor.
Oh, make him stop talking. His voice sounds like a grindstone on a grindstone.
Now, looky here, young fella. I'm a gentleman of the old school. And if my daughter is half-witted enough to want to marry this good-for-nothing you got...
Oh, no, no. I'm not going to let my alter ego get married. Ugor can't get married.
Oh, that's a mighty selfish way of looking at things, Rogie.
Oh, look. Look, my head, I don't feel good. I came up here for a rest.
Now, we're going to have a serious talk, Mr. Rogue. My daughter's happiness is a mighty important thing to me.
Oh, shut up, shut up, shut up. I can't stand that silly voice of yours.
But he's right, Rogie. You can't stand in the way of our happiness. It's not fair. It's only normal to want to get married.
Now, look at it from our point of view, Mr. Rogue. Here's a couple of...
I can't stand it. I'm getting out of here.
Grab him.
Come back.
I came to, I was looking right in Joe Dale's face, which was inches from mine. The inside of my head was still whirling and clanking like a washing machine, but it didn't take me long to get back up to date. I remembered I had dropped in at Joe Dale's house for a quick swim and found Joe stretched out on the living room floor, shot. Then I remembered that swishing sound, which always means another bump on my head. And now my feet felt like they were in diver's shoes as I got up and looked the situation over. The murder gun was lying there by the side of Joe's body, and there was a billfold on the floor by the door. Being the kind of a guy I am, I picked up the billfold first. It was Joe Dale's, and I put it in my pocket. Then I took my handkerchief and carefully picked up the gun. I was bending over Joe, gun in hand, when I heard a voice behind me.
Joe! Joe!
A beautiful dame had walked in on me and caught me bending over the corpse, gun in hand. She fainted. I ran over to her.
Hey, come out of it, lady. Lady, hey, come on. Oh, come on. Oh, Lord, everything happens to me. Come on, come out of it. Open your eyes.
But she didn't. And while I was working on her, a man showed up in the open door. He took one look at the tableau and dived for the murder gun, which I'd dropped. He pointed the gun at my third vest button and said,
"Just stay right where you are. I know how to shoot this thing, and I'm holding you for the police. Your partner got away, but I'll see..."
"Look, mister. Look, I am the police.
I know who you are. You're Richard Rogue, the private investigator. You've been mixed up in plenty of shady deals before. What did you do to my wife?"
"Is this your wife?"
"Yes. What's the matter with her?"
"Well, she came in, saw Joe Dale's body, and fainted."
"Barry, is that you?"
"Yes, dear. Now, don't worry. Oh. I'm here, and I'll take care of you."
This man... He was standing over Joe's body with a gun in his hand when I came in. He's a killer, Barry. Be careful."
"Don't worry, dear. I have him covered. Stay right there, Rogue. I'm a nervous man, and I advise you not to move while I'm phoning the police."
We'll return to our story in just a moment. First, time was when heavy perfumed oils were considered the thing for pleasant-smelling hair. Now, of course, we know that the clean, delicate fragrance imparted to the hair by Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo is much more the modern idea of good grooming. This clear, golden liquid shampoo makes an abundance of creamy lather that does an efficient job of cleansing the hair. It removes dust, perspiration, oily film, and all unpleasant scalp odors. Leaves the hair with a gloriously fresh, clean feeling. And Fitch's Saponified Shampoo is made from mild coconut and pure vegetable oils. Thus, you can use it as often as you like, because Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo does not rob your hair of its natural oils. Always leaves it soft, lustrous, and manageable. Next time you're at your barber or beauty shop, ask for a professional application of Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo. Or buy an economical bottle at your drug or toilet goods counter. Look for the bottle with the bright yellow label. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
I couldn't very well blame Perry Stevens or his wife for thinking I just put the kiss of death on Joe Dale. Mrs. Stevens came in and saw me bending over the body with a murder gun in my hand, promptly fainted. And so when Perry arrived, the floor was cluttered with bodies, and I was the only stranger. He picked up the killer's gun and held me at the point of it until the cops arrived. Lieutenant Urban of Homicide was in charge, as usual. He seemed a little bit discouraged with me.
"Well, Rogie, what's your story?"
"Urban, it's a simple one. I just dropped in here to take a swim and found Joe Dale dead."
"Why didn't you report the murder to Homicide?"
"I didn't have a chance. The killer was hiding here in the room. He slapped me silly and escaped while I was out. How do you think I got this cut on my head, shaving?"
"I never know about you."
"There were two of them, Lieutenant. I saw one of them run out from behind this house, a big man, red-haired, rough. This man here, this Richard Rogue, had an accomplice."
"When I came in, Mr. Rogue was bending over the body with a gun. That gun in his hand. I almost caught him in the act."
"How about it, Rogie?"
"Well, I was bending over the body all right. I'd just come to. I was checking up."
Why didn't you call homicide when you came to?
I was going to, Irvin, but this dame here walked in on me, screamed, fainted.
I demand that you arrest this man.
Oh, wait a minute. What were you doing here?
I came over to...
Joe was an old friend. We just came over to take him to dinner. Don't try to implicate a couple of law-abiding people in your crime.
You and your wife came together?
Of course.
Then how come she came in ahead of you?
I hesitated when I saw that man run out from behind the house. Lieutenant, do I have to stand here and let this murderer cross-question me?
Mrs. Stevens, you and your husband came here together?
Yes. We had a dinner date with Joe.
Did you see this man run away from the house?
No, I came right straight inside.
Okay. Look, Rogie, you'd better come down to headquarters with me right now. We've got some talking to do.
Irvin, I'll be down in an hour. I want to go to the emergency hospital and have my head put back on. I got to go home and get a suit without these red polka dots. Then I'll be down.
I demand that you put Rogue under arrest, Lieutenant. Now, take it easy, Mr. Stevens. I've had a little more experience with this sort of thing than you have. See you in an hour, Rogie. Be there.
That gash on my head had cost me a lot of blood, and I was a little woozy as I left the ex-residence of the late Joe Dale. I drove turtle speed to the emergency hospital, where the doc made a few insulting remarks about me getting scars on the scars on my poor head. And then I went home. I walked in the door, and an arm went around my throat. A crooked elbow squeezed my Adam's apple until I choked. I felt a hand sneak into my inside breast pocket and lift that wallet I'd picked up on the floor beside Joe Dale's body. The elbow squeezed a little tighter, 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 and I had a horrifying sensation of bursting lungs. And then the elbow released me, and I fell to the floor to the accompaniment of departing footsteps. I was still lying there when Irvin walked in through the open door.
Got worried about you when you didn't show up, Rogie. What happened?
I don't know. I guess I just got faint. Flopped over here. I lost a lot of blood, you know.
Better take care of yourself, Rogie. I don't want to lose you. You like talking?
Oh, sure, but I don't know anything to talk about.
Maybe you'd like to talk about a murder.
Well, tell me, did you get a line on that red-headed guy that was seen leaving Joe's house?
I've got a description out on him. Nothing's happened yet.
How about Mr. and Mrs. Stevens? Check up on them?
Yeah. Stevens is the personnel director for an airplane company. Pays his bills promptly, has money in the bank, lives within his income. And he's been a friend of Joe Dale's since college days. They're clean. That leaves you and a big red-headed guy in the finals. One of you killed Joe Dale. I don't think you did it, but I could get an indictment against you in 20 minutes for the evidence I have.
No, but I didn't kill him. I didn't like him well enough. Well, I guess it's up to me to find the big red-headed guy, huh? You checked the gun?
No soap. The number was filed off, and the only fingerprints on it were Stevens. And they got on it when he was holding you.
Yeah, I was there when it happened, remember? Oh, brother. Brother, do I feel weary. Well, there's one thing I'll swear to. Mrs. Stevens was not expecting to find Dale murdered. She really went out like a butler on Thursday night.
You know, Rogie, I'm a cop. And the fact that you and I understand each other doesn't make any difference to the commissioner.
Yeah, I know.
Joe Dale was a pretty prominent character. Lots of connections. Now, the commissioner expects a quick pinch. And with our friends, the Stevens, down there at City Hall, swearing that they saw you standing over the body with a practically smoking gun in your hand, well, it looks like it's going to be you I put the arm on.
Oh, but you know I didn't kill him, Irvin. Why would I want to kill a guy like that?
Yes, I know you didn't kill him, but the newspapers are on the old man. He's on the chief, and the chief's on me. I'm going to have to pinch you, Rogie.
You're a great pal, Irvin. But look, if you pinch me, they'll never get a conviction. You know that you can't get a conviction without a motive.
I know that, but you've made a lot of enemies around headquarters, Rogie. They see a chance to give you a bad time, and they don't want to miss it. You can see the spot I'm in.
Yeah. Now, look, Irvin. Give me 24 hours to get the guy that pulled the boom on Joe Dale. Just 24 hours, and I'll have him for you.
Oh, that's whistling in the dark, Rogie.
Yeah, with a 10 whistle. But just give me a chance at it anyway. Maybe I'll be lucky.
Okay. It'll probably put me back on a beat, but I'll play along with you. You've got 24 hours, Rogue. Then, don't make me come after you. Come in and give yourself up.
The deal? Yeah, the deal. You're a good cop, Irvin. I know you're sticking your neck out like a turtle at feeding time, and believe me, I won't let you down.
Okay, Rogue, I'll get out. Better get some sleep.
You look awful.
Oh, I can't afford the luxury of sleeping. I got work to do. Okay, Rogue, call me if you need me. I'll be around. Lots of luck. You'll need it. Hello?
Hello, hello. It's Lieutenant Urban there.
Just a minute. Hey, Urban.
Yeah? For me?
Yeah. He'll be right here. Hang on. Mighty excited little man on the other end of this.
Yeah? Hello. Urban speaking.
Lieutenant Urban, this is Perry Stevens.
Yeah? And what do you want?
That man, that red-headed man that I saw running away from Joe's house this afternoon.
Yes.
He came here tonight to my house.
What did you do?
He came here to kill me, but I shot him. He's dead. Please come out at once.
I'll be right there. Now, don't move a thing till I get there. Come on, Rogie.
Well, this puts that eight ball I was behind over the corner pocket, doesn't it, Urban?
Yeah, looks like Stevens wrapped his case up for us.
And that makes me very happy. Well, I wasn't looking forward to sweating it out in a jail of yours. No, I didn't have anything against that red-headed guy, but I'm never going to miss him.
Well, it takes me off the spot, too, you know.
Yeah, well, you don't have to be a hero in my corner. Oh, well, all's well that ends well, to coin a phrase.
It's right down this next block here.
Huh? Stevens must have a lot of cabbage, big houses in this neighborhood.
Yeah, I checked that. The wife's got money. Oh, there it is, that two-story white shop. There's the precinct prowl car in front. The boys are on the job.
Well, let's get with it.
Good evening, Lieutenant.
Hello, Bauer. Medical examiner here yet?
No, not yet. Precinct boys just got here.
Thanks. Come on, Rogie.
Well, this is quite a layout. Wife's got dough, huh?
Yeah, and Uncle left her plenty about a year ago.
Makes it nice for Perry.
Oh, what a mind.
Yeah, you know, someday Betty Callahan and I are going to have a chicken ranch out here in this valley.
Look, we're investigating a murder. That's serious business.
All right, Charlie, take it.
Hello, boys. Where is he?
Right in there, Lieutenant.
Thanks.
Well, Lieutenant, it's about time you were getting here.
We came as fast as we could, Stevens. Now, suppose you tell me what happened.
I'll be glad to. My wife and I got home tonight.
Where is your wife?
Is he any right to question me in that tone of voice, Lieutenant?
Where is your wife?
Why, the shock was too much for her. She's upstairs.
Don't blame her. She's had enough for today. Come on, what happened? You got him with that shotgun, eh?
Yes. I was frightened, terribly frightened, and as soon as I came home, I got my shotgun. I hunt a little, you know, and I put it here beside my chair. It was just a hunch.
Yeah?
The doorbell rang. My wife answered the door. We thought it was a neighbor. This red-headed man walked in. I recognized him at once. He was the man I'd seen run away from Joe's house. He had a gun. He was going to kill me. I suppose because I was the only eyewitness to the crime.
Well, that makes sense.
It certainly does. It's the truth. He turned to talk to my wife. I saw my chance. I shot him. There he is. Your murderer. I've never seen anybody killed before.
Well, he's sure dead.
Yeah. Ever see him before?
No, not that I know of. Hey, what are you doing, Rogie?
Oh, I'm just trying to get some identification on the guy, that's all. So shake down. I thought... Uh-oh.
What's the matter?
Oh, an alligator billfold. I didn't expect to see one on this guy. And hey, Urban, this is Joe Dave's billfold. And it's full of dough. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, several $100 in it.
Yeah, that's the final piece of evidence.
Mm-hmm. I'll take care of it.
Well, there's the medical examiner, and the newspapers are about due to arrive. You've done a good night's work, Mr. Stevens. I want to thank you.
I'm not a man of violence. I'll never be able to forget this night.
There was something about that wallet that was as strange as the bride in black. Other identification on the body pegged the redhead as one Tom Church, recently of the Navy, now a resident of the Crane Hotel. I watched for my chance to give Urban and his minions the slip and faded away. I went to police headquarters and charged into the identification bureau on a dead run. I handed the sergeant in charge the wallet and asked him to dust it for fingerprints. Then I waited. When the sergeant came back, his jaw was stuck out like the business end of a snowplow, and there were icicles in his voice.
What's the deal, Rogie?
What's the matter with you? All I ask you to do is to give me the identification on the fingerprints you found on the billfold.
Yeah. Do you know whose prints I found, you wise private creep, do you? yours. Only yours.
We'll return to our story in a moment. First, a word to the ladies. Did you ever make the remark that your hair never was manageable after a shampoo until it was time to wash it again? That's been the experience of many a woman. Well, you can have your hair immaculately clean, lustrous, and manageable, too. Try using Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo for your hair care. This shampoo is made from pure natural oils and leaves your hair soft and manageable even immediately after shampooing. Its creamy, fragrant lather never dries the hair, but cleanses gently, removing dirt, perspiration, and every trace of unpleasant scalp odors. Fitch's Saponified Shampoo brings out the gleaming, natural color highlights in your hair, too, and leaves it clean and fragrant. A special patented rinsing agent contained right in the shampoo leaves your hair sparkling clean and free from any dull, soapy film. Try Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo the next time you want an extra special beauty treat for your hair. Then use it regularly to keep your hair soft, fragrant, and lovely. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
The news that the only fingerprints on that billfold were mine turned on the floodlights. And one of my hunches picked up a hammer and started pounding against my skull. I left the billfold there for Urban and took off for the Crane Hotel to check up on the red-headed guy named Tom Church. The hotel was a fourth-class flea bag on Main Street. The clerk took a look at my buzzer and answered my questions. That's right, Shorty. I'm the law. And I want some answers. Now tell me, how long has Tom Church been registered here?
Tom Church, 3 days. He came in 3 days ago.
All right. Now let me see his phone calls.
Oh, we don't give out phone
calls. Now don't lip me. Give them to me before I jump over that counter and stand on you while I pick them up.
Oh, okay, okay. You look like just the kind of guy that could do it. I'll get them for you.
I checked the phone calls and found one of them had a message that was going to ring somebody's number for the surprise party. I thanked the clerk and drove to the valley. The pre-dawn gray made way for the sunshine just as I walked up the front walk at Dale's house. An elderly man walked around the next branch, pushing a lawnmower.
Hey, are you a policeman?
That's right, yes.
A horrible thing, that murder yesterday. Did they get the killer yet?
Well, I think so. Yeah? Were you home yesterday afternoon at the time of the killing?
Yeah, I wasn't paying much attention, you know. I heard the shot, but I thought it was a backfire,
Old-timer, I want you to tell me everything you saw and heard after that shot, will you?
Well, you see, I was sitting in my living room reading the evening paper, you know, and I saw you drive up. You sure you're a policeman, mister?
Why, yes, of course.
Yes, well, I'd like to see your credentials. You know, you were the first man I saw enter there.
All right, here's the dope on me. Here, the sheriff's office loves me. There it is. Satisfied?
Yes. I've heard of you, Mr. Rogue. Well, after you drove up, the lady arrived and...
What do you want, Mr. Rogue?
Mrs. Stevens, I'm coming in. I want to talk with you.
No, come back later.
I'm sorry. Go on in and sit down.
What do you want?
Some answers. Sit down. Now, where's your husband?
Asleep. Nothing ever wakens him.
All right, let's get right to it, huh? What were you to Joe Dale?
I don't know what you mean.
Mrs. Stevens, you've been seeing Joe a lot, haven't you? Now, don't bother lying. I've got witnesses. You and Joe Dale were better friends than your husband knew, weren't you?
Well, no. I used to meet Joe once in a while to talk over investments he was making for me.
At his house? In the afternoons, usually, huh?
Yes.
Mrs. Stevens, your husband killed Joe Dale. You lied when you said that the two of you had a dinner date with Joe last night. I just talked to your husband's secretary. He was supposed to be in San Francisco yesterday.
No.
Yes. But instead, he went out in the valley and killed Dale.
I practically surprised him in the act. He got panicky, knocked me out, and ran.
No, no, he didn't. He didn't.
I can prove what I'm saying, Mrs. Stevens. You came up in your car alone. Your husband came up in a cab a few minutes later. He had to get back in to get that wallet and the gun to make the murder look like a robbery. He picked the gun up so there'd be a reason for his fingerprints on it. Then he went to my apartment and collected the wallet after choking me half to death. Are you with him then?
You're just making this up. You can't prove it.
Mart! Mart! Don't say any more. It's a little late for that, Stevens. You've bungled the job all the way through. And you won't be needing that gun.
Harry, don't. Don't shoot.
Give me that gun, Stevens. You'd be crazy to get in a shooting contest with me. You stay right where you are, Rogue. I'm not afraid to shoot.
Marge, they can't make you appear against me. That's the law. If you stay with me...
I'm coming after that gun, Stevens.
You stay where you are, Rogue. Marge. Marge, stop looking at me like that. Nobody knows anything about what I did, but Rogue and...
No. It... No, Perry. You killed them. And I'm glad to get rid of you.
You... Marge, you can't. Don't sell me out.
I've been frightened to death ever since I've married to you. Take that gun away from him, Rogue. Take it away from him.
Give me the gun, Stevens.
Get away from me, Rogue. Marge, you're going back on me. You can't do that, Marge. We're in this thing together.
Let me have that gun, Stevens.
I should have shot you instead of him.
Give me that gun or I'll break your arm off. Give it to me. Okay, Stevens. This is the end of Easy Street for you. Well, that finished that case. Stevens went to the gas chamber on Marge's testimony, and Marge is still in prison on an accessory rap. The red-headed kid, Tom Church, was an innocent victim. He'd been interviewed by Stevens for a job the day before. Stevens knew he had no relatives, no connections, so he decided to frame him for the murder of Joe Dale. He described Church to the police, then called him at his hotel and asked him to come to Stevens' home for an interview about a job. If Church had been in when the call came, I might have muffed the case. But he was out, and Stevens left his number for a callback. That was luck, I guess. But I don't know. I think I would have solved the case anyway. Of course, I didn't make a dime out of it. Oh, well, money can't buy happiness. But it can buy a lot of things that make unhappiness pleasant, can't it? Oh, you know what I mean. This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it, Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Dee Engelbach produced and directed. Next week, we have a story for you about a missing witness, a worried rogue, and an ambush that failed. Be with us then, will you? Thanks for listening, and now here's Jim Doyle.
Be sure to tune in again next week, same time, same station, when you will again hear Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Laugh a while, let a song be as bad, use Fitch shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, use Fitch shampoo.
After and between Fitch shampoos, you can keep your hair shining and manageable by using a few drops of Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic every day. Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic is not sticky or greasy, yet it gives your hair that well-groomed look.
That's going to do it for this episode of Case Closed. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. In the meantime, RelicRadio.com has past episodes of Case Closed, more from Rogue's Gallery, Crime Classics, and a variety of different types of old-time radio shows. Find them all linked to right on the front page, alongside links to our social networking stuff, links to the Shoutcast stream, our forum, and everything Relic Radio, right at RelicRadio.com. There's also a donate button there if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Certainly appreciate it if you're able to help out. Thank you, as always, to those who have. And thank you for joining me today. Be back next week with another episode of Case Closed.